Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent Breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 426, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Smarkitude.
I know.
We should do that.
We should. Yeah,
Smarkitude.
TM.
Yeah, I like that because that is good.
So, is this the Real Spoilers or is this just fantasy?
This is fantasy.
Not mine.
Is that right? Did you not like this movie?
No, I just thought being here
on
a Sunday morning. I don't know what you're talking about.
I mean, you did get an extra hour.
Yeah, that's true.
Some of us did. Some of us had to work an extra hour. Yay.
Do you at least get paid for it?
Yeah.
I didn't.
Yeah.
I used to work overnight at the grocery store, and they pulled that crap with me.
Really? Oh, they were just like, you got off an hour early in the springtime.
Right. And I was like, no, but I didn't get paid for that hour. Right. So,
I can't tell you how many times in radio I pulled the work the overnight card.
Yeah, I've done that.
Where you're like, it's 1 o'clock all over again. And guess who didn't schedule an extra hour of music?
Oh, yeah. Oops. I remember that.
Ruh-roh.
I remember those days.
Yeah, I was looking. I was.
Could have got a DaVita.
I was
four times. I'm out. Here's a Tool song.
I was walking a beat, and I was just like, "Oh man, all right, this night's cruising along." I look at my phone. I was like, "Damn it, it's 1 o'clock again." Oh, this is gonna suck.
Oh goodness. So we
should. The guy said, "Ned,
yeah.
Ned."
We should probably go around the table, and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Dan.
This
sorry,
is Joe.
I was thinking Phil.
This is Dan. Ned Ryerson.
Yeah.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. And Chris returns.
Yay!
To discuss Bohemian Rhapsody. Real quick, shameless plugs. Don't forget we're available on iTunes. You can go there, rate, review, subscribe. Check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/realspoilers. And join the League of Show Sharers. So there, that's all that. Let's dig into the movie, shall we?
Let's get this out of the way right now. Bryan Singer's a scumbag.
Yeah,
and how he is still
a legendary scumbag.
How he is still directing movies is beyond me.
Well, he's still getting offers. That's
the thing.
He's supposed to do Red Sonja.
No.
Yes.
After all this, he's the front runner for that.
I'm surprised they're making that movie, given how bad that Jason Momoa Conan movie was.
Ooh.
I liked it, but it was really bad.
I really wanted the Rose McGowan Red Sonja. I still want that movie.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Not with Bryan Singer.
Or Rose McGowan.
Right.
That was the Robert Rodriguez one, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, that would have been pretty cool. But yeah, I didn't even realize that he was the director of this movie. Like, I heard his name kicked around. But I thought they brought him on and then they fired him.
They fired him on the set, but it was over. It was almost done.
I just thought that it was one of those things where they were just like, you got to go.
He wasn't showing up to set.
He had enough sway. I mean, because isn't Bad Hat Harry his production company? I think it is. He had enough sway that
That's
he was
one bad
the big
hat
reason
Harry.
Why this got the green light was because of his involvement.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's a shame.
Yeah, it could have been kicking around a long time.
Right, we talked about it in the last episode where it was Sacha Baron Cohen and Todd Phillips.
Yeah, been kicking around a long time.
And it's just like...
But the producers said, hey, you've got a reputation.
Yeah.
And it's not just a reputation of, like, a scummy reputation. He has a reputation of doing the stuff that he did on this movie, which is,
just
like,
not show up.
Not show up. His DP shoots a lot of the stuff. And his DP shot a lot of the stuff in this movie.
I mean, that guy's gonna start directing.
Because he's an absentee guy. When they went to cost him, he breaks down in tears on set. And it's like, it's
who, Brian Singer does?
Yeah. They're like, look, you got to be here. You're the director. It's your job.
I guess that kind of explains Superman Returns.
And he would disappear. And it was he and Rami Malek that actually came to.
I feel like Rami Malek is one of those dudes who, like, doesn't put up with bull.
He's universally, like, known to be a really, really good guy.
Like a good dude?
Yeah.
Right on.
He doesn't have a lot of time to mess around, though, it doesn't seem.
He got worked up. Everybody's like, ooh.
Oh, no.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, so, like, we know about his past. We know about the accusations. And we know that he was barely on set for this. Mm-hmm. Which is, I got to tell you, I loved this movie. So maybe he should just not direct and let his DP
do it.
I think
they might want to just consider giving that over because his DP shot a lot of that last X-Men movie too.
Oh, the bad one, Apocalypse.
Last few that he's done.
Wow, really? Yeah. That's so weird. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so this whole movie is based on kind of like it's interesting because it is definitely based it's on Freddie Mercury and his life. But they do a really good job of keeping the band in the movie as well. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of it is focused on Freddie Mercury, but Queen is there throughout most of this movie.
Because they're heavily involved with the development. So us in there. This isn't just a Freddie Mercury show.
Go ahead.
I was saying, I do think they did a good job, though, of, like, I feel like the other members of Queen realize they hitched their wagon to his star, and they realize it to this day. And so they wanted to be in the movie. They wanted to not be seen as – they didn't want it to be a Freddie Mercury is, like, the real talent.
Right.
But they also were willing to acknowledge that Freddie Mercury was responsible for about 80% of it.
And they do reference that a lot where they're just like, you know, we argue about whose song is on the album and whose name is on this.
Right.
And, you know, they definitely let you know that the other members of the band were also responsible for songs.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a movie that is the byproduct of a movie that has the involvement of, you know, existing band members.
Yeah.
So what you get is it's not a sanitized version. They just didn't really want
to. I think it's a PG-13 version.
It is a PG-13. You know, it's not a tawdry, like, R-rated movie, but a lot of what they were they really weren't that. And
do
you
think, was he though? Like when
I think you get that.
I think they definitely get that across without going over the top.
Yeah.
So the songwriting part of that, that's a fairly common problem when you get with bands.
Right.
My day job is I work with management for bands, and I've been either on the label side or management side for 17 years at this point.
Yeah, and you work with some big names. Drop some names.
Shinedown, Hailstorm.
Yeah,
I've worked with everyone from. I mean, if we want to go back to the label days, Guns N' Roses, Nine Inch Nails, tons of bands, mainly rock bands. But you'll find that
never heard of any of them.
When it comes to like the songwriting credits, because that is where the real money's at.
Sure, right. Sure.
It's all in publishing. And in some bands, everybody in the band has a part of the deal. There are deals where maybe two people have the contract and everybody else is a hired gun.
Right.
So the two primary people are going to get much more than everybody else. So while some people may look at that and go, well, that's just people fighting for their fair share, that's a very regular and very common argument amongst artists.
And it gets very nebulous to where when you're writing a song in a studio and somebody's like brings in a song that's relatively finished, and then somebody says, well, what if we do this on the bridge and we add this little tinkle to the riff?
Now
then,
I want songwriting credits.
And then you're like, well, where does it stop and where does it start? Like,
You mean like that one line that Mike Love wrote for Good Vibrations?
Right.
Right. Well, and that's the thing is technically you're now part of the writing of that.
He is.
And that's, you know, I think with the point with Queen, that was a very important part because that was them saying, we acknowledge, Freddie, that you're the guy, but from now on,
right,
we are four equal people.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. It's the,
and like that's
the irony of that is that it's Deaky that says that, who had up until that point written some of their biggest hits.
Sure.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's his name on it.
Right. Well, it's not unlike, and I'm going to bring it back to my favorite band of all time is Guns N' Roses. You know, it was before a show where they were going to go on and open for the Rolling Stones that Axl held the band hostage and said, you all sign over your rights to the name Guns N' Roses to me, or we don't go on stage and this band is done now. And that's why, before the reunion for the last 15 years, Axl was able to take whoever the hell he wanted out and call it Guns N' Roses because he owned the name.
Gross. Wow.
That's why I didn't have any interest. That's why I'm sorry, Buckethead. I'm just not right into that.
That's that story that they say that they tell. Were they in L.A.? When they were opening for Metallica, and Hetfield gets set on fire.
Yeah. Oh, that was Montreal.
Okay, and then they come out. They're like, hey, look, he got burned up pretty bad. We'll come back. And then I think it was Newstead that said, he's like, all they had to do was go out there. And they would have been the gods of that show. And he's just like, and Axl was just like, nah.
Because
he didn't want to be upstaged by James Hetfield being set on fire.
Right? Yeah.
And not on purpose. Like he walked into a phosphorus flame that went off.
And it came down to money. It was a dual headline show, and Guns was being paid, you know, however much money to play however long. And so that's what they did.
Right.
They went out, like, if they were billed to play 90 minutes, they played 90 minutes. You're right. They could have played 2.5 hours and been the heroes of the world, but they weren't going to make an extra buck.
Sure, sure.
So they didn't do it.
Right. But I think that Newstead even said, he was like, Axl was complaining about his throat. He's like,
sure.
And then we walk back there, and he's drinking champagne and smoking cigarettes.
Right.
And Newstead's like, you know, if you quit doing that, you'd be okay, right? And he was like,
yep,
cool.
Yeah.
And just kept doing it.
Well, back to songwriting credits. Like, that's like Lennon McCartney.
Yeah.
They made that deal very
100%.
Early in of like, that way nobody's ever argued about who wrote more. It was just like, any song, regardless of if the other guy even had input on it, it was Lennon McCartney.
I just picked up Ringo being like, can I just get like some of it?
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
And to show you the value of publishing, like back to my band, the Monkees, when Nesmith was so frustrated about them not being able to play on the records, one of the ways they shut him up was to give him the B-side
to the singles
because on a 45, which was the primary way of selling music at that period of time, on a 45, they didn't weight the importance of what was moving the product. So an A side or a B side
equal money.
Yeah. And so they'd be like, well, how about we put you on the B side of Stepping Stone?
Yeah.
And so he would make a ton of money off of that.
Yep.
And they're just like, okay.
Yeah.
You got it.
That's exactly right. And that's so, and as we get into this, there's a couple of moments in this movie that are very like some of it's lighthearted, some of it's serious. But it's all very accurate as far as inner workings of intra-band stuff and band and label stuff and things like that.
Yeah. I never knew Freddie Mercury was married.
I don't think they got married.
Oh,
no, they were engaged.
No.
But they never got legally married.
Yeah. Yeah. Gotcha. I never knew about that, though.
Mary Austin?
Mm. Yeah. Hmm.
And apparently she plays a bigger part in his life than she does in this movie.
I believe he's the godfather of the child.
Yeah, he is.
Oh, is that right?
There's some footage of him playing with the child. Like, it was like right at the very end, and they're playing with each other.
She dated Brian May, right?
No.
First.
And then, so it's like she'd been around the band.
Yeah.
And then Freddie.
That makes a sound. Yeah.
That's not what I meant. But but then Freddie saw her at a gig and, you know, did the whole little thing and then they got together.
You mean Dr. Brian May?
Dr. Brian May. That's what I meant. Yes. So this movie opens at Live Aid. Like it's the back of Freddie and he's getting ready to go out and he's wearing the jeans and the white and black Adidas and the white tank top. And he's just about to go on stage at Live Aid. And then they cut back to younger Freddie Mercury. And it's interesting, like, to see his family dynamic with his folks. Like, his mom and his sister, like, they know. Mm-hmm. Like, they know that he's meant for something more. And, of course, he gets the overbearing dad who's just like, where are you going? He's like, out. And he's like,
again?
Right. So he's kind of busting his balls a little bit about going out. And, again, he's working at, like, the Heathrow Airport as, like, a baggage handler. You know, not the most glamorous job in the world.
Right.
But apparently he was also, like, that's the thing is they kind of wash this out that he was in a band before, and
they make it look like he was a big fan of this band,
right,
and was scared to talk to them, but he had been in a band for a while and like and like knew these guys, and it's not as
he had introduced Tim Staffel and Brian May.
Yeah.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not, they make it look like he's just scared.
Right.
Like, you know, sheep in the wilderness. That's
and
like,
I can
maybe,
sing too.
Maybe I could be in
I
a
feel,
band.
I feel like Freddie Mercury was never that guy.
No.
Was
no.
kind of and this, always and, super confident and, in himself.
And honestly, this band was never that band.
No. Smile wasn't that band?
I mean, like, this band was kind of, people were always circling around this band knowing that they were gonna be something.
Yeah. Got it. Like, But Freddie also, you know, he did kind of maneuver his, like, he had always been gunning for
that spot,
the lead. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't an accident. And it was like, it's sort of like Paul Di'Anno and Iron Maiden, you know, before Bruce Dickinson. It's like very, you know, very successful, very well known, really good. But, you know, he wasn't the guy that was going to put him take him to the next level. And he knew that.
At the same time, when the lead singer of Smile quits,
right,
and they make fun of it because he's going to go join a band called Humpy Bong, right? And you're like, well, that's ridiculous. It's not ridiculous at all, because Humpy Bong featured the drummer from the Bee Gees.
Yeah.
And so, like,
oh, really?
Yeah, and so, like, and the Bee Gees had just been on a crazy tear through the charts. So, I mean, they were basically, on paper, they were handing that guy a career on a platter.
Yeah,
right. Like, you were going
to
go.
What's he supposed to do?
Yeah, right. You're going to go take the job with the guy from the Bee Gees. Like,
right.
That's, yeah. You know.
That's no decision at all.
Yeah, I mean, you're in this basically bar band that's going nowhere.
Right.
Or you can play with with a guy from the Bee Gees who not only, like, that guy's also going to know that world. He's already going to know record people. Yeah. He's already going to know the publicists and the TV and the media people. Yeah. So, like, you've already done 40% of what you need to do.
Hindsight.
Yeah.
Sure.
Although, should've stuck around.
I mean, that guy re-recorded his vocals for this movie.
Oh, is that right?
Smile, actually, as Smile, played a couple shows not that long
ago.
That's cool. They're still, you know, like, there's no acrimony there.
Yeah.
I do appreciate that Brian May still has that hair.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
He was like, born with it.
He's like, hey, if it ain't broke.
Yeah, right. It's not dark anymore, but God dang it.
Like, you know exactly who he is when you see that hair.
Absolutely. Like, I knew exactly who he was. So, yeah, so he goes, Freddie kind of sees the band play. He goes, and this is where he meets Mary for the first time, and, you know, there's definitely a connection between the two. And I also appreciate that they don't, with the way that, what's the guy's name? The guy that plays Rami Malek.
Yeah.
The way he plays it is he definitely plays Freddie as effeminate, but not like over the top.
Right.
He's not
like,
flamboyant.
He's not flamboyant yet. Well, he is kind
Freddie Mercury was never not like.
You see glimpses of it, and it's not until he comes out to Mary, then it gets turned up to 11.
Right. Well, Freddie Mercury wasn't super flamboyant or anything.
What?
I never saw him as like...
He was very prancy.
But
yes. His stage mannerisms were very prancy.
Yeah. He definitely loved the pageantry and the showmanship of
being on stage. Also the way that rock and roll was of that day. I mean,
you're talking about
David Bowie era, too.
Yeah. Sure.
But that's, I mean,
David Bowie, yeah.
Okay, but also David Lee Roth, because we're talking to the 70s, that was the start of Van Halen.
Mick
Jagger, all those guys.
Yeah, Robert Plant.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I can't put my finger on it that what the difference is that, like, when Robert Plant has those kind of moves on stage, it doesn't come off as prancy or effeminate.
Like,
he's not wearing a unitard.
That's true.
Or ballet slippers.
Okay.
Like, Freddie, like, there shouldn't have been, it's like, you know, lyrically, when you dig into, like, Judas Priest, you're like, well, we should have seen this coming.
Yeah, right.
Like, well, shouldn't have been a surprise.
Who would have thought that guy in all the leather and metal studs?
Yeah. What is Living After Midnight really
would
about?
Would actually be into leather and studs.
Yeah. In retrospect.
Ram it down. Yeah. Yeah. I remember when I found out that he was gay, and you're just like, oh.
Yeah.
You listen again, and you're like, oh.
Well, that changes Turbo Lover completely.
Yes.
But yeah, like, even that first Queen album, I mean, there's
Eat Me Alive.
Right. Yeah. It's all there.
Yeah.
You know, it's like watching Get Out. Yeah. You see it one way, and then, then you get the twist at the end. You're like, oh, it's completely different the second time I listen to that song.
But it was also like, I mean, they were piggybacking a lot of what the glam rock scene was.
Sure.
You had Roxy Music at that time. You had David Bowie. You had T-Rex and Slade. And you got to look at all these bands. The Sweet.
Yep.
It wasn't. I mean, it was on par with everybody else.
I would agree. Yeah. But there was definitely something.
Well, musically, they were already like,
yeah.
I mean, they were in the glam scene, but they also had like a lot of like, I don't want to say prog rock, but there was definitely a lot of, you know.
No, there's
they
prog were, rock.
Like there was clearly other things in their music and tempo change. Like,
well, I think that's where you get to the difference between musicians and artists.
Yes.
And there's no denying the intellectual side of Queen. No.
Both, yeah, they even
both, kind of, and I'm not even going to say just lyrically, but like, and they you see it when they go to record that record, and they just start putting literally everything in the kitchen sink in that studio and using it to get different sounds.
Right? Yeah. They're like throwing they've got a speaker tied to a rope, and they're just like
swinging it back and forth,
trying to get different sound. But like to your point, like there's this when Freddie goes solo, and he's like, I was with this band. And they were doing everything I told them to do, and it just wasn't the same.
Because they weren't creating, they were taking orders.
Right.
And that's the difference.
Yeah. That's the difference.
And that's the difference between a band and session musicians.
Right, and that's exactly right.
Yeah.
So in this movie, I know that when...
Did you get to see this?
Yeah.
Okay.
When there were the concert scenes, they were obviously... He was lip-syncing to Freddie Mercury.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Do they isolate his vocals when he just raw sings? Is that Freddie or Rami?
It's Freddie.
It's Freddie.
So they brought in alternate takes. They brought in another guy
They
to
did
sing.
Bring in another guy.
It's something Merkel and Markle.
Sounds just like him.
And he does. I mean, he's a Freddie Mercury
yeah,
person.
Because I'm like, that sounds like him. So I'm like, did they isolate Freddie's vocals?
I gotta tell you, you know who sounds just like him? Is the drummer from the Foo Fighters. Like, it's...
Taylor Hawkins?
Taylor Hawkins sounds almost identical. They did... when they were here last, they did
Under Pressure
with him doing the Freddie parts and Dave doing the Bowie parts.
Wow.
And it was nuts. Like, he can do the AO. Like, it sound. I mean, he's insane.
You know who I always thought sounded like Freddie Mercury? Was that band Fun, the lead singer? Like, that Some Night song? I think his
I can see that.
I can hear
Are you familiar with the Struts?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
He does that.
The Struts are very, very Queen influence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I kind of
both in their music and their style and persona.
You know, when they did the tribute to Freddie concert and they had all the different singers and bands playing with them.
I know where you're going.
Well, there was one person that I wanted to do it because there was like, they were suggesting that maybe Robert Plant was going to do it. And I was like, that'd be cool.
Man, that'd be cool.
But it'd be more like the Paul Rogers. But there's one person that I was like, honestly, if that's who went out with them, I would go see. And it was Annie Lennox.
For me, it's George Michael.
Oh, he was great. But I was
George Michael,
if you got Annie Lennox, because then it's like, she could hit those notes that we want to hear.
Sure.
His version of Somebody to Love from that tribute still gives me goosebumps.
Yeah.
And I was talking about this last night. That I thought when they ran the credits of this movie to really hammer home how big this band was, they should have shown footage from that tribute because it was the same venue, Wembley Stadium.
Yeah.
6 years later, they packed that thing again for the Freddie tribute.
Yeah.
The only miss of that tribute was the finale of it when they brought Liza Minnelli out to do We Are the Champions.
It's because Freddie loved Liza.
And I get it, but it was so Broadway bad. Like, everything else about that, like,
that was for him.
Elton John and Axel doing Bohemian Rhapsody and George Michael doing Someone to Love, Annie Lennox and David Bowie doing Under Pressure.
Yeah.
Everyone they picked to do every one of those songs was perfect.
Yeah.
Is that on Blu-ray? Like, can you get that in
HD?
Yes,
you can get it. It's, and it is worth
the watch. I want to see it. I've never seen it.
It's so pretty good.
I've seen the Live Aid, which everyone's seen.
It was
seen,
a whole day thing where, during the day, all the individual artists did it, much like Live Aid, did an abbreviated set, like 20, 30 minutes. And then at night, Queen came out, and they just rolled singers. So, like, during the day, you had Def Leppard, Guns N' Roses, like, every big band of the day came out and played their set. And then at night, Queen played for, 2 hours?
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a different singer, different singer, different singer.
That's
and it's,
awesome. It was pretty good.
I sat there the entire day and just watched MTV.
Yeah.
And it was insane.
When they had music.
Yeah, that's right.
That's not a thing
music
anymore.
Music television.
And so, the guy I was talking about, his name is Mark Martel.
Okay.
Is the guy who...
He does the isolated vocals.
Yes.
I don't know exactly what he does, but I know that they brought him in to sing some of this stuff.
Okay. Oh, well.
Because yeah. there were times like in the bar when he first meets them, he sings and I'm like, whoa, this guy. But if there's no music in the background, yeah. like he's just doing vocals, right. so it's got to be him. But it sounded just like Freddie, so yeah. that was cool.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, his... Obviously, you know his vocal range, and that is not an easy thing to replicate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he comes out, and he introduces himself to the band, and they're just like, our lead singer just quit. And he was like, I'll do it. And then they were just like, yeah, all right, cool. See ya. And then he breaks into one of Smile's songs, and they're just like, hold on 1 second. He's like, I'll wait for your offer.
Band
and,
meeting.
Like,
yeah.
walks away, and he's like, hey, can you play bass? And he's like, no.
Nope. Not going to do that.
And just walks away. Yeah. And I was like, so this movie does, like, there are some heavy emotional stuff. But there's also a lot of comedy. Like, yeah. there's some really good, natural.
Apparently, he was very, very funny.
I can see that for sure. Yeah. I can absolutely see that. So they start
in interviews, even when he's like serious, it's like a dry humor though. Yeah. His answers are he's very good at answers.
Right. Yeah. So he starts touring with Smile and they start doing I love the scene where he's trying, like he goes into like the Freddy stage persona immediately.
He can't not.
Right. Yeah. He just has to be that guy. And, he's trying, like, it's the microphone on the stage is like bolted down. Yeah. So he's trying to like pull it off and he can't get the microphone off and he's not singing the words right. Yeah. And Brian May's like,
the origin
sing
of his
song,
half
Freddy. Sing the song, Freddy.
It's the origin of his half microphone.
Right.
I don't think this movie is what you could classically refer to as good.
Right.
Is it
good?
To me, this movie is a deep fried taco, and that
really?
I don't think it's very good. But you still end up leaving having had fun.
It's fun.
It's fun.
It's fun.
Even though the lead character dies of AIDS,
I gotta tell you,
it's as fun of an AIDS as an AIDS death movie.
And Rami
can be.
Malek is mesmerizing.
This is almost Mamma Mia for guys.
How dare you!
I don't know that he's wrong. The thing is that
it's kind of a sing along concert movie.
It's a great performance.
Yeah,
and a very behind the music. Movie,
especially
it's
at the
very
beginning.
Behind the music.
Lifetime is there's some laugh out loud, unintentionally funny moments.
Well,
like I mean, this movie is they could call this Queen the fan service. when it's like, here's how he invented his microphone stand.
Sure,
and here's how he did. Like there's a lot of moments where I'm just like that, or like there's like just some awful lines where it's like, hey guys, I just got the call. We're number one in the U.S.
Sure.
Like, it's just like...
There's some very stereotypical Hollywood moments.
Yeah.
It's very bland a lot of times.
Right.
And that's where I think that the Sacha Baron Cohen movie, even if it wasn't so rated R gritty, I don't think that it would have been as cutesy.
Right.
I think it would have been a more serious...
I don't think it would have been as fun.
So,
maybe.
On the cutesy tip, I'm assuming everyone in this room caught... The Mike Myers
show.
Oh, joke.
Of course.
Yeah,
and like
awesome.
Everyone
because
in the theater caught
my,
the Mike
only
one.
Half my theater caught it.
I got to tell you, that's my introduction to Queen.
Is it really?
For a lot of people,
mine
it is.
Too. Wayne's
and
Wayne's
I think
too.
They know that. That's why he's in it.
Yeah. And I think the only people who didn't catch that joke were people who didn't realize that was Mike Myers.
Yeah. Possibly.
Oh, right on.
Because he looks so different.
He literally says headbanging in
a
car.
Yeah, nobody's going to headbang in a car to this song.
Yeah.
But that is, I remember seeing Wayne's World and hearing that song for the first time, and I was like, who is this?
I'm like, what are they doing in that car?
And that was it. Like, I was in for life after that.
Don't they, I forget if it's, where in the movie they reference it that Bohemian Rhapsody was re-released 16 years later and went
at the
number
end.
One
at the at very the, end
it was yeah. 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 yeah and yeah. that again is
yeah,
Wayne's
World.
World.
Yep.
Yeah, it's interesting that so I thought that they had done it twice. I thought that they had met they so they re-released it after Freddie died,
yes,
and it went back to number one,
yes,
and then they re-released it for Wayne's World and it went back to number one, and it's just like how many songs do that. Where it's just like you
Candle
have these,
in the Wind, I guess.
I guess.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
With different lyrics.
Which, by God, I saw that show this week and it was insane.
That's what I heard.
But yeah, like that song, I feel like, is probably top five greatest rock songs of all time.
And he had been working on that song. It was called the Cowboy Song.
Okay.
And he had been working on that song forever.
And then,
like,
then Lizzie stole the title.
But before Queen, he had been working on that song.
Yeah.
It's just
and
so
they
atypical.
Just called it the Cowboy Song.
I liked that they kind of did the Creed thing where Like he's so he's laying in bed with Mary and he reaches over the top of his head and he plays like just the like four or five keys of the piano riff and stops. And I was like, if you just keep doing that until this movie earns that song, that's kind of brilliant.
Well, he didn't feel he didn't think he was a very good keyboard player.
Oh, really?
And they were like, you're really good.
You're good at everything.
But right. they knew that he wanted to be out on the stage.
Sure.
So, I mean, that's why, like, so songs live, like, he would sometimes stay at the piano, or if, like, Roger was picking up vocals or Brian was picking up vocals. But, you know, that's why the piano wasn't prevalent in a lot of
like
the
off
songs
to the side.
Live, because it would be a little bit and then jump out.
Right. And which makes sense. Like, you're paying to see
until they
him,
brought in,
right,
like, another keyboard player sometimes.
Right.
So the interesting thing about Bohemian Rhapsody going number one, the amount of times it did, is, and this is, again, a part of the movie that is art imitating real life, when they're having the conversation with Mike Myers' character, and he's like, this song is 6 minutes long. That's a real thing with radio.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, it's gotten a little easier now. It's not so much the 3 minute rule. It's usually like if you get much over four and a half,
yeah,
it's an issue. There are exceptions. Obviously, this was an exception. There's been songs that
Let
have
it
gone
be,
six plus.
Stairway to Heaven.
Right.
Yeah.
November
come,
Rain.
Come Sail Away.
Yeah, like there are songs that will push it, but the
Euro Trash Girl.
Yep. Easily.
Moving in Stereo.
Yes.
Yeah. They're out there.
Nookie.
Yeah.
All right.
Bad Out of Hell.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What's
Paradise
the,
by the
Dashboard
Lights.
Lights.
Yeah, that's what I meant to say, yeah.
But it is a fairly steadfast rule that if your song is over that, you either need an edit, or it doesn't get worked as a single.
Or it needs to be one of the best songs of all time.
Correct.
Right. Guess what this one is.
Yeah, because honestly, the songs we rattled off,
are
with the exception of Euro Trasher,
are home runs.
And there's an edit of that.
Yeah.
Are like the best, some of the best songs of all time.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You got to remember, radio is measured in quarter hours for ratings. And so if you put on a 6.5 minute song, a 7 minute song, and it sucks and people punch out, you just basically killed a quarter hour for them.
Yes. Gotcha.
And so they're not going to commit to a song that long unless they know people will love it and not change the channel.
And that's what this one is.
And, yeah. And as they mentioned, like, where do you make an edit in this song?
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
There is, yeah, there's no
there's
way.
There's nowhere to chop out that doesn't make the song even more disjointed than it already is.
Because it's like three different songs.
Yeah.
How do they do Band on the Run and on radio?
I mean, that's an exception.
Let it roll.
Yes,
yeah, because I mean, you can't edit that. It's
right.
And again, that's a great song.
That's when like, AOR became a format, album oriented rock, where they would play like full sides.
Oh, yeah. Right on. Yeah.
But the funny thing about that is like the radio is you know, when they do play it on the radio, that guy played it 14 times in 2 days on the radio.
Mm-hmm. There's a reason.
Wow. No, he played it like I was reading about that. He played it like 90.
It was like nonstop.
It was like 96 times. Like I like,
oh my
it was
gosh.
Like yeah, like he played it like a ridiculous
by demand or because people were just he just let it go.
So him and that DJ Kenny something
Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
And
yeah, Freddie Mercury and that DJ.
Right.
Everett? That sounds right. Like we're like really good friends.
Were they friends?
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. Actually, yeah. Okay. Like, I mean, they were both gay, but they were not.
Well, they definitely
a thing.
Like in that scene, you've got Freddie, like obviously we know that so the first album comes out and Kills and they're going on tour and Freddie starts to dabble. Yeah, a little bit. And he starts to distance himself from Mary and Mary kind of feels it and she knows what's going on. So they go back to Mike Myers, the Mike Myers producer character, and they're just like, this is what we want to do.
Yeah.
And they
their second album is heavily like the difference between their first album and second album.
Yeah.
The second album is there's stuff on there where it's like you can see where they were going.
On the first album.
The first album was pretty standard.
Sure.
Liar and Keep Yourself Alive were like the big hits. Seven Seas of Rye became a big hit. But by the second album, all the experimentation and the orchestration.
And he says
and
that like
stuff,
they
like,
have
it
that,
was right there.
They have that scene where he's just kinda like, just do it again. And even Freddie Mercury and the whole band. And I,
we don't
and I like,
do it again.
I like the fact that the band sticks together where they're just like, no.
They
like,
wanted to do
more. We could do it again, but that's not what we want to do.
Well, and that's the eternal argument with bands is if you don't do it again and you start getting experimental, you become Pearl Jam. where everyone's like, dude, just play 10.
Right.
If you stay the course and make the same record 18 times,
yeah,
you become Nickelback.
Or AC/DC.
Yeah.
That's true.
Although, I give them a pass because it's like, I'm good. Like they,
right.
Thank you for never doing a power ballad, AC/DC. I applaud you.
Yeah.
You
it's, it's like, you know.
But that's the thing, right? That's the catch that Chris is referring
absolutely
to.
Absolutely is.
That it's like, if you don't evolve, sometimes people are like, oh my God, it's the same thing. But then sometimes if you don't evolve, people are like, thank God for never evolving.
Well, yeah.
It's like there's,
if you evolve too much, you're at
even selling
the
out.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, see, so one of my favorite bands of all time is Nirvana and then into the Foo Fighters. So, and the Foo Fighters, if you listen to that first album with Big Me, and then you listen to the most recent album, like they have a much different sound. Like the bass of that band is there, but they've experimented. They've, you know, Concrete and Gold.
They've
is
grown
fantastic.
Up.
Exactly. When we saw them, Dave was just like, "I've been doing this for 25 years." Mm-hmm. Like it's so, and they did everything.
Yeah,
you know, they played everything you wanted to hear. So, Queen, you know, having the foresight to be like, we can do the same thing and it's going to be fine. We're going to sell it, or we can do what we want to do and we can do this. And like, he plays him this opera and the, like, Mike Myers is just like, what are we doing?
Well, and he even makes the comedy. He's like, here's the thing. Nobody really likes opera.
Yeah. I do like
Jim Beach
like,
is like,
I like
opera.
Yeah. And he's like, I like opera too. And Miami. I do love that Miami. That was, I do love that they call it, and like even he starts to be like, starts to respond to Miami.
Yeah,
like
Miami.
I like that a lot.
And I found out the DJ's name was Kenny Everett, and at one point he played that song, it says 36 times in a day.
Yeah. I mean, so, it was like,
so it's 6 minutes.
That's
a day.
Lock himself in.
That's 3.5 hours.
Yeah, no, it was an all day thing.
I feel like I might have to turn it off after 3.5 hours.
Yes.
A very quick anecdote. A mutual friend of ours named Tommy, who's a radio programmer in St. Louis, used to also program Q101 in Chicago, which is a big alternative station. And a few years ago, I was working a Red Hot Chili Peppers record.
Gross.
And yes, correct. And it was the first single from the record. It was this song called The Adventures of Rain Dance Maggie, which is heavy cowbell. Heavy cowbell. And so we found out that Q101 was going off the air. So I call my boss and I go, I have good news, I have crazy news, and I have bad news. I go, the bad news is Q101 is going off the air tomorrow at 4 p.m. The good news is he's adding the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Crazy news, from noon Wednesday until 4 p.m. Thursday, the only song he's playing on Q101 is the Red Hot Chili Peppers' Rain Dance Maggie. So I made sure to open up Facebook and follow along when it started playing. And like the first few times you're like, hey, you keep people like, oh, cool, new Chili Peppers. An hour later it was like, what is happening? Why is this still playing? Like 3 hours later it was like, oh God, make it stop.
Yeah, that's funny. Like,
I got to tell you.
Burnt a record in 24 hours.
That is the most overrated rock band ever.
I hate the
Chili Peppers.
So that one thing that they did talk about, it was legendary until, because I was like, that's a myth. Was that in the recording of Bohemian Rhapsody that the acetone on the on the tape
was almost
transparent because they had overdubbed. And I was like, that's a myth. And then there's actually, I think it might be on YouTube, there's like a documentary just about the making of that. And it is like, it's true.
And that was the only tape
they
had.
They kept going and kept going. And it is exactly like how they show
and
it.
I do like that in that scene where Freddie, if you look at that, he could come off like a dick.
It was in his head.
Yeah, he knows what he, like, he heard it,
yeah,
and he just couldn't get him to do what he wanted him to do.
But I feel like this moment is done a lot better in Love and Mercy. When you see Brian Wilson,
I agree,
trying to create good vibrations.
Yeah.
Like, it's...
Well, there, what I thought was interesting about that is that they show it more as almost
a psychosis or I have to get this noise out of my head to clear myself.
Sure. Yeah. It reminded me a lot of Love and Mercy.
Yeah.
Without like the neuroses and quite the level, like on a more upbeat, like he's got this in his head. He's got this vision. He doesn't have like psychologically, it may have some issues.
Hmm. It's also done. There was a VH1 Def Leppard movie and there's this, when they, the first time they work with Mutt Lange,
Yeah.
And he goes, go higher. I can't. Yes, you can. Go higher. And it's like 4 minutes of that. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. We're doing this joke again. Yeah. All right.
But, like, but so, you hear the song, Roger Taylor, man. He needed to go higher. Like, yeah. It's insane.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, in that scene, you could take that as he's being a dick. Mm-hmm. But, like, he does, the way Malik plays it is he's not a dick. He's just like, you can do it. Let's like, I hear it, you hear it, let's just do it one more time, we'll get it. And they get it and they nail it, and of course they make one of the greatest rock songs of all time.
Yep.
And they play it, and I do like that. Mike Myers is like, what is Scaramouche? What is that? Like, it's just nonsense.
I will also say, first off, Mike Myers' character is not a real guy. He's based on a guy, but he's not a real guy. That guy didn't. His only complaint was, he's like, this is going to be hard to get on the radio.
Right.
And he's not wrong. But in the defense of this fictional record exec who can't see genius,
sure,
every goddamn band in 1978 was bringing them 8-minute opuses.
I have no doubt
about how, and it was going to be their masterpiece, and they're brilliant, and I'm going to make a record that is a song that's an entire album side long. Like, every,
I'm going to change rock and roll.
Every MF-er was doing that. Right. So, like,
they still are.
Yeah,
yes. Trust me.
I got to tell you, like,
and no one wants to hear that their baby's ugly.
Right.
Sometimes it's ugly.
Your baby's ugly.
Ugly adults come from somewhere.
Well, and I love that they reference. I mean, it's kind of a jab, and I was like, good on them for kind of jabbing their own stuff. Output of Sweet Lady and I'm in Love with My Car,
right?
Because I'm like, I love both of those songs on that album, and they do help round out the album as being a very theatrical album.
Sure,
but taken on their own, it's like those songs are. I mean, there's not a lot. They're very like.
I'm in Love with My Car is a pretty bad song.
It's like,
I love.
It's like when they play it, like when they would play it live. It's, you know, you get to see Roger sing,
right?
And it becomes a kind of a big deal,
right?
But it is a dopey.
I do love that scene where they're
song.
All. So they go to like this,
and they admit
barn,
it.
Right? Which is great.
Which
like
I was like, good
the,
for them.
The Monkees have a song like that. It was gonna buy me a dog, and like, and on the record, like they like. They can't do it straight. Like, they're making fun of the song while they sing it.
Yeah.
And it's great. And I love the constant jabs of I'm in Love with My Car. But I will also point out, going back to our opening conversation about how you appease people.
Sure. Mm-hmm. That's how you do it.
The B-side.
It's the B-side to Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yes, it is. Oh, right on.
So I'm in Love with My Car made him just as much money as it made Freddie.
I do love it. So they go to this like,
and he
barn
still
and,
plays it.
And farm.
That was the other thing. When he goes to the radio station, and he like that, how did you get that song on a 45?
It's a good question.
He probably had a guy who pressed it.
Illegal press.
No. I mean, how does it fit on a 45?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think they thought that far, honestly.
I don't think there's anything left at the end.
I thought about 4 minutes was the most you could get on a 45.
And he, when you see him drop the pin, like, he's pretty first far half. Into the record.
The single for American Pie, another really long song.
Yeah.
Like, you got to flip the 45.
Wow.
Yeah.
And but there's a break.
Yeah,
there's like a small bill
because of that.
And then, yeah, because you have to flip it. But yeah, like, so they go to this barn and they have to like they're doing on that, they're recording on this farm, and I love this scene where they're arguing about the car song and Bohemian Rhapsody and what's and like they Brian May and the drummer
Roger Taylor
get into an argument.
Who's the only one that actor, like, everybody else is pretty accurate to like mannerisms and voice and everything, and like looks
that
too.
Dude looks like
holy
that
crap,
dude looks just like Brian May.
And Deacon, which I thought was funny because it's the kid from Jurassic Park.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
it is.
Yes,
the original.
Yes,
it's Tim.
Yes,
I had no idea.
Yeah, that's the kid from Jurassic Park.
But so they're arguing.
Yeah,
and like he goes to pick up
the
third coffee pot.
Like, yeah, he's okay.
He's like, not the coffee, and they're just like, oh yeah, right. Yeah, sorry. But yeah, so they
there's only one room for one.
One queen. What does he say?
There's only room in this band for one raging queen.
One flaming queen. Or either way, you're just like, all right. But like, even he's not even out yet. So like, he's making these jokes, and I think honestly,
they all
know.
They know.
They know. And Mary knows, and we're getting to that where, so they go on tour with Bohemian Rhapsody, and he's starting to dabble a little bit more and get a little bit out there, and he's got
he got the handler.
He's got the handler who makes the move, and I love the scene with the waiter where he like smacks him on the ass, mm-hmm. and he was like, "Mother, like you touch me again, I'll knock you out."
Yeah,
and Freddy's like, and, "Whoa!"
And this was more like fan service. Than yeah, I rolled my eyes out.
Is that how? What, how did, is that how
your,
they met?
What's your name? The person that you will spend the end of your life right. with, mm-hmm. like,
but is that how they met? Is that
no,
how they
he was a hairdresser.
Oh, okay, yeah. okay. So like he makes the move, and even Freddy's just like Freddy rebukes it. Where he's just like, "What are you doing?"
Well, he says, "You only
you
think
you think yeah. you know me, you but you have you no, know you know nothing about
which
me."
Which is what you know.
Yeah, I mean, he kept his. I think he kept his private life private for the most part up until he went out there.
See, I don't know. I took it as he was out to his friends,
yes,
but not to the world.
Right.
So like he
oh,
was he
I could see that
I,
for sure.
I read it as he was not closeted in his private life. Like he like but he did
you saw that
but,
party. There was no closet.
Well, no, right. But that's the party is after he like he still hasn't come out to marry yet.
No.
And I feel like that is the well, scene where he goes where he comes out.
Yeah, but I personally I interpreted that as not
you think the band already knew?
He's with them more than her. So.
I think he was still struggling yeah. with like what
I think
is
he
this,
was.
What
I,
does this mean about me?
Sure.
I think you know? Mary knew.
I think deep down
were
she knew.
Very, yeah, like she knew pretty early on.
I don't know. I mean, the way the movie at least sets it up, I don't feel like she knew until.
I think
like,
Mary's aha moment was when she was watching Freddie and the DJ. Yeah.
Yes. That's what I think, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they definitely, like,
yeah,
because
like,
I mean,
she didn't really get a fast one pulled on her.
No. And you she know. Even says she's yeah. like, I
don't think he was lying about who he was. I think he
right.
thought.
I think he loved her, and
I think he did love her, and I think
absolutely.
He absolutely the day he died, he loved her. I just think that it was not a sexual love,
right? Yeah, a romantic love.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
No, because I think that there was a romance there.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I just think that from a physical standpoint, he liked guys,
and he tries to tell her I'm bisexual,
and she's
like
come
no,
on. Yeah, I do like
but,
that,
and
scene
that's
with,
a very common thing for when gay people come out that they kind of start with
right.
Well, I think I'm bi,
right.
And then over time, and that's why sometimes the gay community can be dismissive of bisexuality,
sure, right.
Yes. Because so many people have gone down that road of like I'm bi, and they're like, no, you're not.
Yeah, and she's trying to tell.
But I like that scene where he meets her dad for the first time and they're talking back and forth. He was like, "Could you tell your daughter that she's a fantastic shag?" Mm-hmm. She's just like, "He can read lips."
He can read lips.
And like just the moment between the dad and Freddie where Freddie's just like, "Damn it."
Yeah.
All right. But yeah, so they go on tour. They release the album. Mm-hmm. He comes out to
they
her.
They play Fat Bottom Girls in this movie way too early.
They do play way too early.
I'm like,
I agree.
No.
That's a little bit. We got
like
some time.
That was on Jazz. That was like the seventh album.
Right. And I think they're just trying. I think it's to the Mamma Mia. Yeah.
Play the hits.
Play the hits.
I got it. It's right. Like, oh, we got to play America. That's an American sounding song. And it's like, I get it. And it does work. But I'm just like, that's not when that came out.
So, so he comes out to Mary. And Mary has it's a heart-wrenching scene where she's just like, you're another butt. Like, Mary, I love you, but, I'm attracted to you, but, and you're just like, and for you, it's like, but I'm gay. And she's like, and I can't even be mad at you because it's not your fault.
Right, right.
Like,
right.
You weren't doing this on, like, you didn't lure me in and then screw me over.
Right.
Like, this is just who you are. So.
And then he starts to get upset when she goes to take the ring off.
Yeah, he does. He gets super upset and she leaves it on for a little bit and then she takes it off.
I mean, I like that, the whole thing where he bought the house next door.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and he's trying
to me, that almost came off a little Michael Jackson-ish as far as like playing to like the inner child is like, turn your light on.
Yeah.
Okay, now turn yours off.
Yeah.
Now turn yours on.
Yeah, that was kind of a weird scene.
Yeah.
I just think I took it as like he just needs to know that she's there. You know, like he wants
to keep her in his life.
Right. And she's the person that probably that does know him the best outside of the band. So like that's his one connection to the quote unquote. Real world
or normal world
or normal world. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like having her there and seeing the light on probably gives him a sense of comfort.
Sure.
It was just weird the way they did it.
She's right across the street.
It was a little controlling.
Yeah. It was a little bit.
Yeah. Do this and don't ask any questions.
But I feel
light
like
on. Light, it was just
that's a rock star.
Pour
thing,
a drink.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was very weird.
But I like it's almost
I'm going
like,
to use this money to control you.
It's the Prince thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where
oh,
Kevin's,
very much.
Where Kevin Smith is just like, he would wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning in Minnesota and want a camel and couldn't understand why people couldn't make it happen.
Give us that footage.
And they're, oh, God.
Give us that footage.
I don't think we'll ever see it. I think that's in a vault covered in boxes and dust. We'll never
But he
see
just
it.
Tweeted the other day that he thinks that they're going to want to use it.
For what?
just because eventually, like,
they're going to strip mine.
Yeah, ball,
that
there, ball. So
they just haven't dug that.
There's
deep
gold
yet.
In the middle.
They're still at the beginning
because he says there's such good stuff on there.
Oh
they're
yeah, well
use
he
it
said
eventually.
He's like he's got. I mean, we're talking about a Kevin Smith Q&A from the first Evening with Kevin Smith set where he's just like, there's hundreds of songs you've never heard mm-hmm. and thousands of videos you've never seen, yeah. like fully produced music videos that you've never seen yeah. because they just...
We will all be dead and they will still be releasing yeah, Prince.
Just cranking out some Prince stuff.
He'll end up being like Tupac where there's going to be yeah. more music and more stuff released of him after death than while he's alive.
So Bohemian Rhapsody blows up. The band blows up. Like, they are the biggest rock band in the world at that point. And Freddie kind of starts to go a little bit into a tailspin. He has kind of partnered himself up with the handler.
And that guy was a
scumbag.
Yeah.
Scumbag.
He was a leech. He was a latcher on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And is that a real dude?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
That's a real dude.
Okay.
Yeah, that whole thing with the BBC, that all happened.
Oh, so he's like, I've got photos and I've got all these stories. He really did all that?
Yeah. And then, so what happens is I guess the handler brokers a deal with CBS. Is that, I'm not really sure how that
went
down.
So the whole solo album thing?
Yeah, that wasn't as much of a bone of contention.
That's not accurate because Roger had released two solo albums.
Ah.
He did like one in 81, Fun in Space, awesome. It was recorded between like Flash and the Game, like during their, you know.
But I will also say though, in this period of music, what you would see with solo albums is there were two ways to do a solo album. There was, you were going to go out and do your little fun pet project as a solo
album.
We're
going to come back and rock this out.
Yes. Yeah. Or, and that was kind of like, oh, yeah, that's cool. Go have fun, and then that's your little thing, and you can do that, and that's, you know, sort of almost like a hobby.
Sure.
Right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, and then there's the Steve Perry's going to go do a solo album and put out a record that sounds just like Journey.
Exactly.
And so, I think that's kind of the difference between those two solo records is that nobody was going to run out and accept a Roger Taylor solo album as like close enough to Queen, but a Freddie Mercury album. They could.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
The Roger Taylor album doesn't sound anything like Queen. He plays everything on it by himself.
Right.
It's really cool. It's a very like new wave influenced album.
Right.
Brian May did a mini solo album, and it's the Starfleet Project, and it's him and Eddie Van Halen.
Oh,
yeah,
it's amazing. It's only three songs. It's amazing.
That one
popped
me off
guard.
I wasn't prepared for that.
And it's like, you know, like Eddie, who's very like. It is funny because they did Jump right after this, so. You know, my buddy always blamed Brian May for like Eddie getting into keyboards more.
Sure.
But I'm like, man, it is solid. You want to hear something?
That's cool.
Just those two trade licks.
Yeah, that would be a hell of an album to listen to.
Yeah, it's amazing.
But that's not something that's going to encroach on the Queen.
Sure,
brand.
At all. Sure.
Right.
When Freddie Mercury
it's
goes
like the
on its
voices
own.
Of right. Brian May and the voice and a good, but you know. Yeah, it was
like,
so it was
it's like when Richie
things.
Sambora broke off.
It was a bit like I was like that's not really accurate because you know those guys like they would tour, they would work so hard in the studio and they would tour so heavily and then they would take a break.
Yeah,
and
Queen never broke up.
They never broke up. Well, it is funny. They all said you know afterwards they're like yeah multiple times somebody was trying to quit the band.
Sure, yeah, sure.
And they would always come back because
and
they knew.
It's interesting, like. Even Freddie at his worst, and he does become his own worst enemy in this movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I feel like they still play this where he has the heart of gold, where he goes in, like he shows up late when they're going to about ready to record We Will Rock You.
Also not accurate.
Didn't think it was accurate.
I mean, timing wise, I'm like, that's, you know, not
different
really,
Freddie Mercury.
Yeah, that was.
But like he even says he was like.
When he changed the hair, and I do like that they say, you know, when he changed the hair and grew the mustache and you know, he's like, what do you think? And Roger Taylor's like, gayer.
Yeah. We're not the village people.
It's like,
well,
but like he says it kind of in a mean way, but kind of in a funny way.
Yeah.
See, I didn't hear it mean. I heard it as like they were friends and he could get away with saying that to him.
Oh, absolutely.
I agree.
Like,
you could say something kind of
because he had accepted all these other parts of him so he could also tease him a little bit.
Right. He busts his balls a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Like they come in and they have this like. Freddie and Roger are pushing each other, and then
John Deacon
starts playing the riff for We Will Rock You, and they're just like, oh, wait, that is all right.
He's the
good.
One who really didn't sing much,
right?
And was the like considered the quiet one? He wasn't. The guy was like a songwriting. I mean, he he is one of those guys where you're like, man, that guy wrote a lot of the hits.
A lot of
you're
big
my
stuff.
Best friend.
And he even says that. He says that like he was responsible
Another
for
Another One Bites the Dust is him.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he
I think this is where you see that the band had influence over the movie, because it's like you get that moment where Brian May is like, no, 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 we're going to do the stomp, stomp, clap. Like,
yeah.
This is
yeah.
my vision
right, right.
for what we should do. And then you get the moment where John Deacon's like, here's the baseline for Another One Bites the Dust. Like,
right.
It's
everyone
not,
gets their little contribution.
Everyone gets their moment
there,
of like,
yeah.
hey, you remember this iconic moment of Queen?
yeah.
That wasn't Freddie, that was me.
Right.
Like, they
it,
where,
and it all happened within 5 minutes of
yes.
the same recording session.
Right.
Yes.
Where I think if this wasn't in the hands of the band, like it would very easily fall into the rhythm of Freddie's the genius and nobody else contributed.
And I think that may have been what the Todd Phillips Sacha Baron Cohen
probably
would not
that's,
surprise
that's
was
what
going,
I'm
was going
yeah.
to be.
It wasn't
going to
be band controlled. No.
I also don't think maybe you won't have the music license. Then next thing you know, you got a biopic and you don't get the music.
like that Hendrix
like,
one.
Yeah. It's like there's nothing worse than like, it's like, I, honestly, I'll take this one because you get the music exactly
yeah.
the way you want it.
Well,
right.
that's why
you
know. I didn't get made is like they,
yeah.
I guess right. they went to Queen and Queen was just like,
oh,
cool. Go do your movie. You don't get any songs.
Right.
It's like, well, we don't have a movie.
You can't
then.
Do it.
Yeah. At least Hendrix, you could do All Along the Watchtower because he didn't write it.
That was
Dylan's song.
A Dylan song.
It
right?
does kind of kill, like, you're like,
ah. Yeah, so close.
You get the music,
yes.
huh?
Right. Yeah. So then Freddie kind of starts to fall into drugs and alcohol and everything that goes along with the rock star lifestyle, and he's being enabled by
the rock star excess.
Yes,
yeah, like more,
PG
more, more.
13 film.
As best they could do.
Here's a pill,
right?
Not a pill.
Yeah.
There's a white powder on the table that nobody is touching.
Yeah, like is that anthrax? What's
yeah,
happening?
What's don't snort that. Yeah. So
this
he,
is Queen.
He is falling down this rabbit hole, and the band like
that wasn't a rabbit hole.
No, yeah. The band kind
it's
of
manhole.
Starts yes. to fall apart. And
is Santa and his reindeer?
I know.
That
dog's
that,
going
that's
crazy.
A crazy
there.
Dog.
Yeah.
So like he sits down with the band and he's just kind of like, I took. So we should say that the handler comes at him with this offer. Comes to Littlefinger.
Yeah,
with
yeah,
the offer from this. CBS, and he was just like, he's not going to, and the handler says, he's not going to listen to me, he should hear it from you. And Littlefinger is, we say Littlefinger, the actor from Game of Thrones is who I'm referring to. He's like, that's a big number. And he was like, right.
Right.
And then this is the show where Mary sees him, he sees Mary for the first time, and Mary brings her boyfriend, and it hits him in the gut. Like it's a gut punch, which makes sense. Like it's, you know, it's seeing your ex-girlfriend that still wants to be your friend, but she's bringing your boyfriend around. You're like, this sucks.
Yeah.
I want nothing to do with this.
And this is where she doesn't have the ring on.
She doesn't have the ring on. She's like, oh, I was traveling and I didn't want to lose it. It's very expensive. And he was like, yeah, all right.
Yeah, you know, a new boyfriend doesn't like you wearing
your engagement ring to Freddie Mercury.
Kind of a big deal.
You're all right. Yeah. So they're in the limo and they're having this conversation and Littlefinger kind of presents the offer. And he's just like, so,
you have to say it like Creepy Littlefinger.
I'm not going to say it like Creepy Littlefinger. So he's just like, so you want me to break up Queen?
Yeah.
And but at this point, Littlefinger knows that he's just been hornswoggled.
He got played.
Like, he knows he got played.
And you see the guy's face like,
yeah, right. So he fires Littlefinger.
Yeah.
Because he's their manager. Yeah. He's the manager.
Kicks
of Queen,
him out of
kicks
the,
him out of the limo.
Yeah.
And then the handler, the boyfriend, he has a boyfriend at this point. Like, that's who he is.
Right.
Is just kind of like, I didn't know that was going to happen. And
so first I heard of this.
Right. And you're just like, ew.
Yeah.
Ew.
Oh, yeah.
Scumbag. So then they have this meeting. They have this meeting with Queen. And we get this. This is where they're like, you fired him. You should have told us. They do Another One Bites the Dust.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of time goes by. And then they're all having this meeting. And Freddie Mercury kind of, again, like he's getting in his own head. He's got people enabling him. And they're trying to siphon off everything they can siphon off of Freddie Mercury. So he says, I've accepted the offer.
Yeah, well, and he says, you all have families.
And I do appreciate that, like, deep down, like, that mindset makes sense. You know, like, everybody has families except, he's like, what have I got? Like, I've got nothing except for this house and what I can do.
His cats.
Cats, yeah.
Right.
And he did a lot of cats.
And I think that's the thing with Freddie. And I think they did a good job of showing this in the movie, is I don't think that any decision he made, be it in retrospect or a good decision or bad decision, was ever done with any maliciousness or evil intent towards the other guys in the band.
Sure. No, sure. I mean, and they were like, he at no point did he feel, and they kind of allude to that when they're doing the Hot Space press tour, is that like I'm the lead singer of the band. I am not the leader of the band.
Right. And he, I do appreciate that. I mean, no offense, Axl is the band. In his own head.
Oh, 100%.
You know, and
although having...
I think that he has been humbled a little bit.
Yeah,
I think that's probably true.
I can guarantee you I wouldn't have been at that show.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have been at that show if Slash wouldn't have been there.
That's true.
Well, look,
And my wife was like, oh, well, that guy's he's the star.
He's the dude.
I've...
Like, honestly, he could have... I know he toured that forever with just him and a bunch of no-names.
Yeah. Yes.
If he had toured that as him and Slash and a bunch of no-names,
still works.
Nobody would have cared.
Nobody would have cared.
It no, I mean, like, it would have been fine. They would have they would have sold him.
But no one would
have
cared.
To the average person, if you get Axl and Slash, you have Guns N' Roses and you're fine.
They're not going to be like,
well, Duff's not there.
It's
well,
interesting because...
I would say if there has to be a third, it's Duff.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it showed in the... Like, I think it was generally... recognized or acknowledged in the show. It's like
I love Richard Fortus. He's a hometown guy and he's an amazing guitarist. The irony is the secret weapon in Guns N' Roses was and always will be Izzy Stradlin.
Yes. And when he left, I was like, oh no.
It's the same way in Van Halen, the secret weapon is Michael Anthony.
Yes.
For sure.
Absolutely.
He's your real singer.
Yep. Yes.
Like Dave's off doing God knows what.
he's
carrying the song.
He's holding down the melody of the song.
I feel like Metallica is the same way. Like your bassist can drop in and out. They've had three of them.
Agreed.
Yeah, but if you lose Hammett, Lars, or James, like that band is gone.
Yeah.
James and Lars are Metallica.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like Kurt
and I like
is
Kurt.
Just as important.
Kurt's important.
Well,
for
they
sure.
need somebody to not be a douche in that band.
That's true. And that's where
he's
comes
the official not a douche.
But yeah, I mean, when you it's interesting when you go from Cliff to James, to this guy,
to Robert,
yeah.
It's the band has changed. The sound has changed, but for the most, with you lose that voice.
Yeah.
Sure,
that's not Metallica.
Well, and I think to me, and I'm obviously biased because I am such a huge fan. But I think that there's a very easy direct comparison when you look at the type of band and the size of the band when you talk Queen and Guns N' Roses. And the difference between those two frontmen are, as I said, I don't think Freddie ever did anything, be it a right decision or a wrong decision in retrospect, with any maliciousness towards anyone else in the band. The same cannot be said for Axl.
No. No.
Yeah, Axl.
Yeah.
Like, Axl, I don't think, wanted the band to break up. But at the same time, Axl was very conscious of...
This is my band.
If this is going to flame out, and let's be honest, it's 2018, and who would have thought we'd have all five original members of Guns N' Roses still alive?
Right. No,
Axl was going to do what he needed to do to preserve the future of his vision of what this band was.
Yeah. Freddie did not... There was no... And like I said, that's why the solo thing, I was like, because the other two guys actually already did that, you know?
But no, I think to Tom's point, where it's like you can have a Brian May album, you're just like, that's Brian May album.
Yeah,
when you have Freddie Mercury, it's like,
when I
the
listened
voice
to
is always the voice.
When Mr. Bad Guy came out, at no point was I like, oh great, no, it was, I was like, this sucks. What is this crap?
I was wondering if he ever did anything solo that took off, because I can't think
he
of
did.
Any
okay,
Freddie
so he
Mercury
did two
songs.
Solo albums, and they did really well, not here in the States, but they did globally.
That's what I'm wondering, though.
Huge.
I only know Queen songs.
No, they were
I don't
huge.
Know.
And he recorded with Michael Jackson, and it wasn't released until recently, and he stopped recording because he didn't like the llama in the studio.
Mm-hmm. Oh. I thought it was Bubbles.
It was the llama.
Yeah.
Michael had to have his llama
have
in the
llama
studio. And Freddie was like, you know what? This is too
weird. That Freddie Mercury was like, you're weird.
This is too weird.
I'm out. You've got some issues.
Yeah,
was
Barcelona
like, this is too weird.
Queen, or was that
that's
Freddie?
Freddie.
That's Freddie, isn't it?
And that's honestly probably his best like solo piece.
Agreed.
If you haven't seen it, it's incredible. It's a song, Barcelona, and he sings it with...
An opera singer.
Yes. And
Pavarotti?
No,
it's a female.
Because he did stuff with him, I thought.
That was actually YouTube.
Oh, okay.
That was Passengers.
Gotcha.
Oh.
But it's pretty amazing. But it was not Queen at all. And I remember when Mr. Bad Guy came out, I was like, oh, I'm really excited. And I'm like,
no.
And I had, you know, until recently, like even Hot Space, which was their kind of disco album, which was a result of their touring in Rio. And huge, they weren't hitting the States at that point. They weren't doing that well. In fact, they've only got one live appearance here in the States, and that was on SNL.
Oh,
when
wow.
Danny DeVito was the host. And Freddie had a
That's their last U.S. performance.
That's their last U.S. Mm-hmm. performance. And he had a huge fight that day with his, I think it was the handler. Mm. And he had sung, he had made himself hoarse, and his voice is straining a little bit. And they didn't think he was going to be able to sing at all. And they did Crazy Little Thing Called Love.
And it kills it.
And Under Pressure, and it's incredible. But yeah. it was a very, like, streamlined. It was just Queen, like, the four guys and their instruments, and no, like, show or spectacle or wow. anything at all. It looks like a very,
very
bare bones.
Down.
Yeah.
Find that.
Especially by Queen standards.
Yeah. yeah. Sure. And at that point, you're just like, oh, wow, that's a great. And it was, I think, the first time most people heard both of those. Well, Crazy Little Thing Called Love has been a hit. It was the first time a lot of people heard Under Pressure before.
Such a, was it amazing.
Wow. And Queen performed with Pavarotti. That's what I was thinking. Oh,
okay.
Of. They did a song with him.
Is that the same stage on SNL? Have they changed that music stage?
No, they. So SNL has three stages side by side.
Yeah.
And so they're basically, there's always like.
Your main stage has always been the same.
There's not necessarily a main stage. There's three very, very small stages. And the way it functions is when that show's beat live, like you have the stage that. What you're seeing is happening on
right.
a stage that's being set up for the next shot, and the scene
that just ended
being broken down.
Yeah. Okay,
and they just constantly rotate through those three.
So
stages.
When the musical act is coming on, they just redo it to however they want to do it. However,
yes.
the band says this is what we want set up.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is insane to me to think. Of the star power that has been on that stage.
Oh yeah.
Not just actors and talent from the cast.
Oh, it's
itself,
ridiculous.
But like that actual state, like that is that if SNL ever ends, which I don't think it will.
I don't know. Like I sometimes think that, and other times I think like that's Lorne Michaels' baby, and when he wasn't there, it really struggled.
And he's not going to be there forever.
And you know, he's not getting any younger. And
right.
when he steps down. It's really going to hinge on who steps in
sure.
to replace mm-hmm. him.
I feel like that stage
yeah.
in its entirety over to Cleveland. Like, I don't know how you can't take that stage and just put it in Cleveland. Like,
you also
gotta
remember everything that happened in there before SNL.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, they've been doing stuff in there since NBC was a radio station.
Oh, that's true. Right. Yeah. Like that, I mean, you have to do that. Like, yeah. I don't know how you can't
do that.
Well,
it's the same thing with the David Letterman / Ed Sullivan stage.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's, I feel like you can't move that.
Right,
like that's stationary. You can pick. You can cut that. you could pull that SNL side stage off,
yeah.
and transport it. Like I feel like, but you're right. The Ed Sullivan stage is the same way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, back to this movie. So Freddie is now sick, mm-hmm. and I do appreciate that they don't hit you over the head with it. They put it on the TV that it's an epidemic. He's coughing a little bit, and he's got blood in a handkerchief. And we know, like everybody knows how he's going to die.
The timing is way off on this.
I think they had to speed it up.
Yeah, it's just
because he didn't know
dramatic effect is
sure.
way off.
Yeah, because he didn't even know he had AIDS when he was
at Live Aid.
Live Aid.
No, he didn't tell them until 2 years.
I gotta
later.
Tell you, I'm shocked they didn't show him in the yellow suit.
Well, that was after. That was actually. They didn't break up. They had been touring like up until a couple.
Yeah.
That was after. They had been touring up until a couple months before Live Aid, so it wasn't like they were like, "What are we gonna do?"
Right, right.
Like,
we gotta go on
happen.
In a day.
He didn't know about the AIDS, and he didn't tell them until 2 years after Live Aid.
Okay. Well, I feel like they. I mean,
now how he told him is exactly how they've said it and how it's written. Is that like he's like, "I've got this thing.
I've got it.
I don't want to talk about it."
Right.
Like I don't want you. And he didn't mean like I was trying to be secretive. He's like, I
think
don't
the sad
you.
Part there though is that by. Wanting to go out with Live Aid is your climax of the film, and it's a good one.
Sure. Yes.
But you lose the part where like he was so sick towards the end of his life, and he was trying to record as much music as he could.
Sure.
And like the band would sit around on call at the studio,
yes.
and like when Freddie was like, "I think I feel good enough," they would rush him over there, mm-hmm. and they would record together, mm-hmm. and then and it might have been an hour and a half.
And I think that's what Sacha Baron Cohen wanted.
Yeah, and I think
they were like, nah.
So it'd be more of a downer than an upbeat.
It's a downer,
yeah. But see, I don't. Think of it as a downer. Like I think of it as this guy
right. till the end
like he loved this band and he had a passion for music
and
he did everything he could to produce it and his best friends did everything in their power to make sure he could still do that.
Right.
To me, that's, I mean, while there's certainly a sadness to it, that's not a downbeat.
No, I mean, the last thing to go really was his voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can even see it in, like, These Are the Days of Our Lives. When you watch that video, you're like, whoa, it's close. So sick.
Yeah. Well, I think that from a cinema standpoint, they obviously wanted to end with Live Aid because it's largely considered the best rock and roll performance of all time.
Yeah, I don't know. There was an industry, was it Billboard that had a survey of like industry professionals of like what's the best concert performance ever?
You mean
the
Queen of Live Aid?
And Queen of Live Aid? Won like by
ran
a
away.
Long shot.
Yeah.
So
they had practiced and workshopped that performance.
Yeah, I believe that.
They were still on tour. Like this movie makes it look like they hadn't played together in
months. Well, that's what Rogers says. He's like, we have 24 hours. We haven't played together in years.
That's not true. And the thing with the volume, that is true.
Where he pulled the tab off.
Yes.
That's great.
He walked over and went, boop.
But to Tom's point, like, if you want to end on that as your climax of the movie, there's a bunch of the Freddy story that you don't get to.
Right.
If you stick to chronological order.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So you have to do a little Hollywood magic
and
make it happen.
I also think that the movie didn't necessarily do a good job at explaining why the crowd reaction at Live Aid was so
over the top.
Was so...
Not over the top, but
so impressive because like these people this wasn't a Queen concert.
No.
Like
they were between day and night. They were like, 6 p.m.?
It gets dark as they're playing if you watch the real footage.
Which they asked for.
Yeah.
They actually asked for the real footage. No, they asked for that time slot.
Okay.
No, they wanted that time slot.
That is always the sweet spot at any festival show.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got them on their highs. They haven't dropped off yet.
Yeah.
They're
right there. Yeah, but so, like, that crowd, one, not only that was not a Queen concert,
right?
Like, they were there to see all the... I mean, there's a Led Zeppelin... There's a Led Zeppelin reunion that day.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the first ever.
Yes.
Like, wrap your head around that.
Yeah.
But, of the original lineup.
Well
Bonham
was except for Phil Collins on drums.
It was a hologram.
Obviously, Bonham wasn't there, yes.
But Queen was added after it sold out.
And they said that. They
so there were, that wasn't made up of Queen fans.
Right.
It was people that were there to see all the big bands of the day.
Right.
And they were still
like Paul Young and Adam Ant.
Yeah.
The subtext.
The power station without Robert Plant.
Yes. With Michael DeBar.
With Michael DeBar. And which is really impressive because it was Michael DeBar's debut as the lead singer of Power Station.
Yeah.
And Michael DeBar is a great singer. He's a guy who should have been a big deal and just always kind of got screwed out of it.
Missed it by that much.
But can you imagine? Hey, you're the new guy, and
you're gonna play in front of a billion people.
Your first show is Live Aid,
right? So the subtext of that a lot of people understood, but maybe some people didn't, was there's no reason or upside to put Queen on the show.
Right?
Queen has no leverage.
Right.
Right.
You know, as they said, the show is sold out clean.
Well, and nobody's getting paid anyway, it's not like a standard deal. Like, why would I pay you? I've already made all my money.
Now, Geldof did try to get them.
Right.
And Freddie was kind of the holdout.
So that's what I want to talk about. That scene where Freddie's in his house. I guess he's in America. I assume that's where he is.
No.
He wasn't?
That's in the UK.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he's in this house, and he's got the hanger-on is there, and he's literally sucking the life out of him.
That might have been in Switzerland, actually.
I mean, that wasn't what I meant. Ugh. But actually, I kind of wish that guy would have gotten AIDS because he's such a scumbag.
Because
he's such a piece of crap.
But he does. I mean, I guess.
Yeah, right.
He does get the boot.
Right. So
I get what you're saying. Like, if he's traveling in this exact same circle, why does Freddie get it? Not this
of
asshole.
All the guys to get it. Like Freddie Mercury shouldn't have gotten it.
Right. Take the bullet.
Right. So
it's one thing to call it.
We say like he's getting these phone calls from Miami.
Yeah.
And he's just like, look, we've got Live Aid. We've got this other thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, yep, make sure I'll call you. Yeah. And he just completely.
And Mary's calling.
Right. And he completely.
And even Miami knows. He's like, he's not getting the message.
Right. So Mary shows up. And of course, Freddie is in the throes of addiction at this point. And she's just kind of like, I've been calling you. And he was like, what? And then she's like, they want to talk to you about Live Aid. He goes, what's Live Aid?
Yeah.
And this is where, and then the hanger-on shows up with all of his buddies. And he's just like, why didn't you tell me about Live Aid? He's like, what?
You forgot.
Yeah, and so then he breaks up with him and kicks him out.
Well, then
yeah.
he gaslights him. I did tell you.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely gaslights
him. You forgot.
Yeah, you forgot. It's your fault. So he kicks him out, and of course he's like, I've got pictures.
His fruit fly speech.
That was brilliant.
That was the best writing in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, that
and
was good.
He kills that line. He kills that
Rami
line.
Rami Malek is
he's
an
so good
amazing
he get,
actor.
He will get nominated.
He yeah. takes this movie. I mean, and I don't say the girl who played Mary, who had a pretty
she's
thankless
also,
job.
I agree. Yeah. Yeah.
Elevated beyond like what was on the page.
Right.
His delivery, not only his delivery, but his movements on stage. Like, yeah. Rami
really nails it.
He yeah. does. And he's a great actor. We love him from Mr. Robot. And then, you know, he was in Short Term yeah. 12 was the first time I ever saw him. And, I mean, the guy is a really good actor. And, he has to be recognized. And I think that's why, despite the movie and the shortcomings that we're talking about, it's yeah. like that performance. And then, of course, yeah. you have the music. And it stands out.
It's yeah. difficult for actors to get nominated for playing other people. Well-known figures mm-hmm. because it's... A lot of times,
because you're not doing anything.
Well, I think people see it as an impersonation
sure.
and not a performance.
Right.
I think it's the same problem that I think Jim Carrey ran into with Man yeah. of the Moon. That I mean, that was an amazing performance, but people were like, "Well, we saw you on Living Color, and we know right. that you started off as an impressionist,
as a mask,
and he started off as an impressionist
right.
yep. when he was doing stand up, and people were like, "Well, you're doing it an impression, you're not acting,
right? Right?
And
right.
they get kind of dismissive.
Little
of
did they know.
Luckily, yeah. I don't think enough people know Rami Malek,
sure.
so right. Obviously, he's not Jim Carrey status,
right.
and although we think he's an amazing actor and we might know him, he really does blend in, and I don't think he's going to run into that issue. He's just not established
yeah.
enough to be like, oh, that's just Rami Malek doing an impression.
Right.
I told
right.
my wife, I go, you know, at a certain point, you forget that is Rami Malek.
You do.
Absolutely.
And I know him, and it's like I do a podcast on yeah. Mr. Robot, so like I
yeah.
know the guy, but really he disappears.
So you yeah. have a solo album is what you're saying.
Yeah. yeah. yeah.
Exactly. Tom, you have another podcast.
What do
you
read? Yeah.
See, but mine is more...
accidentally.
Mine's not a pop culture driven podcast, right? Like I went off and did my little
that's
side
fair.
Project.
We don't talk yeah. television. Yeah. We don't talk television here.
But yeah, so the close of this movie is the entire Live Aid set, and it... I mean, I will say, as much as I
slightly
think...
Slightly...
Abridged?
Slightly abridged.
Well, yeah.
I'm
yeah.
like,
but...
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's
for the
slightly
most
abridged.
Part, it's
yeah.
exactly what
this is where it's like
wanted.
30-minute concert
yep.
yes.
movie.
Yeah, it is.
Like,
I mean, it's a, you know, 22-minute set or whatever. Yeah.
But
and
it's the highlight
it is
of the
kinda,
film.
It is the highlight.
Is. Well,
I
guess we should say that Freddie calls Miami, and he was like, can we still do this? And he was yeah. like, you need to meet with these guys before we agree to anything. And they come in, and I do appreciate that, like, immediately, you know... They're back. Like
yeah.
it's like Freddie says, like we're family, like family has falling out. It's just one of those things. And I do like where they're like, can you leave and
yeah.
we'll talk?
yeah.
And like, they're just like, why? Roger goes, why did you do that? He's like, I don't know.
I just
wanted to.
I just felt like it.
Well, and
like
this is also where, and he doesn't say it, but Freddie kind of hints to Miami.
That he's sick.
Yeah.
Right. He's like, well, you've got all the time in the world. He's like, what if I don't?
Right.
And Miami's like, whoa, what do you yeah. mean by that?
Right.
And of course,
but he doesn't say it in front of the band.
Right.
He says it when they're out in the hall.
Right. So then we get to Live Aid, and it's, you know, this is
kills
the scene.
It.
This is the scene where I was like, that dude is Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
Like, he nails the movements. He nails even, like, the way he's moving his head.
Right.
Like, it's so.
He hired a movement specialist.
It shows.
To like,
it's just saying they should
get
have
the
done
mannerism.
They should have done that on Iron Fist.
This is the part where I think the movie, especially from a critical standpoint, I think it falls into kind of a cheat because while it is entertaining and extremely fun to watch, and you mm-hmm. get that wish fulfillment of seeing,
yeah.
you know, Queen on the IMAX with the sound and everything like that, but it's like we're making a biopic, not a concert movie.
Yeah,
and
it's
a bit of a cheat to go
it's
22
a
minutes
filler.
Of. It is because you're not making a
filler.
Movie. It's
yeah.
it's filler though. It's here. Let's just play songs.
Yeah,
and
you're like,
it's fine.
Okay,
yeah, I'll allow it
because it is like
it's like when an artist plays the Star Spangled Banner in order to get a standing ovation.
Sure.
Yes. Yeah. yeah.
But
I mean,
we should say, going back to that scene of the party where he smacks the bartender on the ass. The bartender's like, dude, I'll knock you out.
Yeah.
And he was like, Jim, really sorry about that. So they have a really touching moment where the two of them are they're talking, and he's just like,
and they're together the rest of his life. They're together like 5 or 6 years,
right?
Right?
He's with them until the day he dies.
Yeah.
So he kind of says, he was like, what if I kind of need a friend? He was like, I'll tell you what, you get yourself together,
yeah.
and come find me.
Yeah.
And he was like, what's your name? And he tells him his name.
Which is,
and then I do like where he goes, Jim Hutton,
Sarah Connor.
Yeah. He goes to the phone book as he's getting his life together, and he's looking in the phone book, and it's just like. Hundreds,
right?
You know, like page, a whole page of Jim Hutton's, So right before they do Live Aid, he goes and he...
Yeah, there's a lot happening in
a lot
this
happening
day.
In this like, day, yeah.
These things happen. Not maybe the same
but
day.
I do like where he's just kind of like, do you have any idea how many Jim Huttons there are in the phone book? And he was just like, yeah, I do. So he takes him and he meets his parents. And like this is a touching moment for me where his dad, his dad this entire time has been very disapproving because he's got his son living his out lifestyle on the front pages of this paper.
Well, and a rock star is like, that wasn't a, right, like, there was right. nothing noble.
That's when you're a first generation immigrant.
Sure. Yeah.
Like rock star is not a viable career option.
And
like,
he also
you're
changed
supposed
his
to be,
name. Yeah. That's yeah. really
you're
weird.
Supposed
it was
to be a doctor
for,
or a lawyer.
For,
yeah. For all of their parents, they were not really on board with their queenness way into their career.
Right.
Like, well, Brian's dad was a little disappointed
well,
that
think
he
about,
wasn't an astrophysicist.
Yeah, as I think about where they met, they were all in college. Like, one's going to be a dentist, one's going to be an astrophysicist.
These
were
smart dudes.
Like, these were smart dudes that were, they were like, just finish college.
And then go do your stupid rock and roll thing.
And like, you're gonna have a safe career and you're gonna make really good money, go the safe route. And these guys are like, instead of being an astrophysicist,
I'm gonna go try this band. He did finish.
Oh, good.
He did publish his.
I think James Young from Styx is also an astrophysicist.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, he did, but he did get his doctorate and you know, he legit. Finished.
And also, what Skunk Baxter from the Doobie Brothers, I believe, is also an astrophysicist.
Dr. Skunk.
Dr. Skunk Baxter.
Yeah. Like, I mean, for, like, the government, like, he does consulting work for, like, top
he's like,
secret
he's
stuff
like
the
Olivia Munn from Predator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, like, the dude's like,
you had me at Olivia Munn.
Dr. Brackett?
You lost me at Predator.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it is a bit of a cheat because it's, and I agree because it's like, yeah, see, this is, they make it seem like Queen was like, who thinks of Queen? And they were like, they were just on tour like 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Now, I will say they were at a kind of
apex.
A fallow point.
They were definitely at this point, and they also kind of glossed over the whole Sun City thing.
Right.
Which was like, that was probably not the best. And they admit, like, that was a huge mistake. Playing Sun City was not a good thing for them.
They play South Africa at the height of apartheid.
Yeah. And they got called out hard on that.
That's where they should have been.
And they were like, But they also, you know, like, playing Rio and like that. They had become this sort of global band.
Powerhouse.
And it's not big in the States, not touring in the States.
Yeah,
and
they even,
also,
like, the States, they show, I mean, like, the reviews for Bohemian Rhapsody, and it's, like, meandering and just okay. You know, it's just like, you crazy bastards.
And, I mean, I think the last time they toured the States was, like, what, 81?
It was the Game.
Yeah.
It was the Game. Didn't go.
Yeah, so that it's interesting. So they do play a little bit of Flash. There's a little Flash in there. Mm-hmm. And they close, like, the last song that they do before the concert is Do You Want to Live Forever, which is the song that I hate off of that album. If they could play Princes of the Universe,
but I mean,
that's the better song.
It's a fitting song for this.
sure.
But that's also that's a kind of magic, which is after this.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought that both those songs,
A Kind of Magic came out after that.
That's like the
Live Aid.
That's like the last, is that their last?
No. Then there was Innuendo. Or no, sorry. There was The Miracle.
Okay.
And then there was Innuendo, which is those two where he was like on declining. Innuendo is where he was
super sick.
And then Made in Heaven came out
posthumously. What had I Want It All on?
That's A Kind of Magic.
That's a great song.
That's a great song. One Vision
is one of my
favorites. Off of that album.
Yeah. Hammer to Fall.
And that's the works. And that was right before Live Aid.
Hammer to Fall.
There's some timing.
That's the jam.
Yeah, especially the Headbanger version.
Yeah.
But there was some timing. Yeah, again, you know, it's like, it's not really, but okay.
Right.
But yeah, they were like huge at that point because of Live Aid. It also did like sort of like bring them
back. Shoot back up.
And then they did do the Yellow Suit, which I believe is Wembley, but
I think it was two years later. Okay.
And that also is on Blu-ray and is an incredible
show. Yeah, I have that.
Yeah.
I have that one.
Yeah, like they were, that's probably the end of their like live presence.
Right.
And they were pretty much, he was sick.
Yeah.
And then they were just sort of a studio.
It's interesting. I was reading an article just recently with Brian May where he says they were, if Freddie could have held out 6 months and lived, Like the drug was right there.
The yeah. protease inhibitors.
Yes, like yeah. he was maybe two yeah. months away
yeah.
from being able to get that drug and prolonging his life. Yeah. I mean, towards the and end, he was like he was.
And this is what they also don't want to show is like
yeah.
the press. Yeah, right, him right.
That poor dude
at the end.
Yeah. Like I mean, he didn't have a foot,
and they were
like
admit
his foot
it,
was gone,
admit it,
like,
admit
he was going
admit
blind.
It, yeah. yeah,
and they do kind of show that when they're on the tour for the game, mm-hmm. right? That's the album they were on tour for.
In the States.
Yeah. Where they're
the press conference.
They're just
that's Hot Space.
Yeah.
Where they're just bombarding him with like, what about your sexuality? And yeah. like that's the scene where he's like, it's not about me. Like he's trying to deflect to Brian yeah. and to everybody else. And they just keep hounding him. And he like yeah. I feel like there's a scene where he just flips that table and is like,
yeah.
you know, I'm out. We're yeah. done. Like yeah. we're finished here. But, so yeah, so the movie ends with them doing Live Aid and you get the little tag at the end.
A little live footage.
Yeah, live footage of him. Man, that dude. Like, that dude was, like, the epitome of a rock star.
Oh, yeah. yeah.
Oh. And it's, like, yeah. there's nobody that will ever do that again.
Yeah.
And nobody that's ever done that
like
since.
Like Chris said online, I mean, that's my number one regret of never being able to see live.
He's yeah. the, by far and away,
yeah.
the top of the mountain as far as musicians and artists. Mm-hmm. That it upsets me that I will never get to see.
All right, here you go. Top three bands that you could see. You can put any three bands you want on a show. What are your top three
like
bands?
Like I would personally want to see.
You could personally see Living or Dead.
I would go with the Beatles, like Rooftop Era.
Yeah.
Smooth. And then I would say Zeppelin. And I'd probably go with Nirvana. I never got to see him.
Yeah. Saw him once.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
What about you, Dan?
Well, Queen.
Yeah.
Beatles. And then there's kind of a revolving door, but because there's bands I have seen, but that's tough. I don't know. I think there's like a certain 70s era Stones that I would have liked to have seen. Like right around Exile on Main Street.
Okay. Chris?
The obvious one for me I won't use because I've seen them. A thousand times.
Have you seen him? There's no need.
Right.
Yeah, I've seen it.
I'm going to go with three that I'll never get to see, and that's the Beatles, Zeppelin, and Queen.
Mm-hmm. Mine's the exact same.
Yeah. So mine is Cliff Burton,
and
Metallica.
Queen would headline that show.
Queen is top, and then Beatles, Zeppelin.
Cliff Burton era, Metallica, Nirvana, and Queen.
Oh.
Like hands like I've seen Metallica with Newsted. I've seen him with Robert.
Yeah.
But the Cliff Burton era, that's my.
Yeah,
that's my stuff. Yeah. But yeah, so there it is.
Yeah, so
I don't remember if we had this conversation on mic or before we were recording. Like, we have the opportunity to go and see Queen right now, but I won't do it. Right. And it's nothing personally against Adam Lambert or anyone else, but without Freddie, it's not Queen.
Yeah.
And that takes nothing away from the guys in the band. But to me, like, that voice is so iconic.
No one can replicate it.
No.
Often impersonated, never replicated.
You look at the amount of rock and roll and even pop music that Queen directly influenced. You know, and it's you could draw a line extending out from Queen that permeates
it's everybody.
Everybody yeah. that
they
followed.
When you look at the tree of rock and roll, I believe that tree is built. Zeppelin and Queen are the soil.
No, Beatles.
Okay, yeah, fine, that's fair. Beatles are the soil. Zeppelin and Queen are the trunk, and then everything else is built off of that.
But yeah, because I mean, there's
that's
just
true.
A lot.
Beatles is there. You're
so,
absolutely
I mean,
right.
You the amount of artists when they say when did you want to become a rock star, and when they're like, when I saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, I went out and bought a guitar the next day.
Yeah.
Like it's just that list just goes on forever.
Right.
It's funny, but I mean, honestly, up until like not quite 20 years ago, 15, 16 years ago, Queen was still kind of regarded negatively. Like they were like, nah, they were a bit overproduced and blah, blah, blah. And it wasn't until I think Rolling Stone, well, I mean, Wayne's World happened.
Sure.
But then also Rolling Stone, you know, they had like the top heaviest metal moments. And it was Brian May's solo in We Will Rock You.
Oh, yeah.
As like being like a pivotal point. Yeah. And I was like, good for you, because I was huge a Queen fan early on. And I was always kind of like, people were like, roll their eyes at Queen. It's just because, you know, for some people, Queen were disco. And some people, Queen were rockabilly. Or some people, the Queen, you know.
That's the thing about Queen.
Yeah. I think
they're everywhere.
The casual person who doesn't necessarily know Queen will discount them
because
of the
I like that Vanilla Ice
song.
Yes.
Sure.
Yes.
And I think because when you think Queen, the first two songs that are going to pop into your mind are We Will Rock You and We Are the Champions.
Yeah. And another one, Bites the Dust, which is very disco.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that there is a bit of, okay, I get it. They're the dumb jock rock band. But there's so much more than that.
Yeah.
And it's one of those where when I was a kid, I, you know, I grew up in the MTV generation. So, you know, I grew up on a steady diet of hair metal. Steady diet. And then, you know, Guns N' Roses hit, and they were the anti-hair metal band.
Yep. Right.
And, you know, you dig into them, and, you know, you can't hear an interview with Axl where he doesn't talk about Freddie and Elton John.
Right. Yeah.
And so, you know, I was like, well, okay, I, you know, playing sports, I'm like, oh, I know these songs by Queen. And I was like, Dad, I want to get a Queen record. Mm-hmm. And he bought me Queen's Classic Queen Volume 2.
Uh-huh.
And I remember listening to it and just going, I want as much of this band as I can find. Yeah.
Only do they permeate all of that, look at Shinsuke Nakamura.
Oh, for sure.
Who's a wrestler. He was in Japan. He's in the WWE now. If you look at his entrance.
And look at what he wears.
Look at what he wears.
Look at
you
get
that wrestling.
I'm going to get in there.
But it is 100%
true.
I gotta
stick this in. But, I mean, if go Google his entrance in Japan. Yeah. I mean, he's doing Freddie Mercury.
Really?
Yeah. Like, it's, I mean, the whole, like, flailing the arms and flicking the hair back, the whole shebang. He's even said, he's like, my inspirations for my entrances and for the music is Freddie Mercury and Michael Jackson.
Well, and I think it's funny though, because, like, now, like, that sort of flamboyance.
Sure.
Especially, you know, when Freddie cut his hair and grew the mustache, a lot of people were like, whoa, dude. Yeah. And they did turn. But I think now people are like, looking at it, it's like,
it's also ironic that it you know, in the 70s and 80s, it was like long hair was for the queers.
Yeah.
And then he cuts his hair and they're like, no, I take that back. Dude, get the long hair back. Yeah.
So, and look at George Michael. I mean, I feel like George Michael looked, he embraced that look.
Yeah.
The early 80s Freddie Mercury look.
Yeah.
You know, the mm-hmm. mustache and even, you know. But yeah, it was this. He's got his fingers in every single era of pop culture and music that exist.
Queen, great movie. Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
Agreed.
Rami Malek.
I'm fine. Yeah. You know what?
Rami Malek, superb.
I had more fun at this movie than I probably would have at the Todd Phillips version.
That's my takeaway. Is I was like, well. Yeah. I don't know that his version would have been.
It would have been interesting. It would have been a good. I think it would have been a good watch. But
Rami saves it.
He does.
I mean, thank God they had him as the actor. You know?
Yeah.
So Dan, do you have a video recovery for us?
Yes, actually I do, and it's directed by Todd Phillips.
Oh,
okay.
It's called Velvet Goldmine.
What is that?
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that was a Todd Phillips.
So
movie.
So if you haven't seen this movie, it's amazing movie, and it's loosely based or mostly based around David Bowie's career and his it's sort of like a pseudo biography, but it's heavily into glam rock. There's a lot of Roxy music. There's no licensed Bowie. So this is a movie that is a autobiography of David Bowie without his this is that movie that we just talked about, and it's without his participation. Now, he signed off on it. He's like, you can make that movie. But he didn't stop them from making the movie, but it's clearly inspired by him. Trying to think of the actor's name. Reese.
Witherspoon.
No, it's Jonathan Rhys
Meyers.
Myers.
Mm-hmm. Plays the David Bowie character. Iggy.
Weird.
Ewan McGregor plays Iggy Pop in Full Frontal Glory.
Oh, my God.
Plays the Iggy Pop character. Eddie Izzard is in it.
How old is this?
It came out about 10, 15 years ago.
Okay.
Spectacular movie. It's about the glam rock scene. Christian Bale's in it, plays a reporter.
Wow.
Who?
Well, thank goodness he's not singing, because we saw him in Newsies.
Yeah. No, he doesn't.
It came out in 98.
98, yeah.
I was going to say, I thought that was 20.
If you haven't seen his movie, it's really good. It's sort of a love letter to the whole glam music scene.
It's interesting that he was doing this in 1998 and he wanted to make this one.
It's a really, you know, I think when that, and this movie came out, a lot of people were like, cause there's a lot of, dude on dude action in this movie. And people were like, what is this movie?
Yeah. 98. It's still kind of not as,
it was definitely an art house movie that didn't really
pop. I saw it at the Tivoli and I was there like with four other people.
Yeah.
And, but it's a very like, and there's like big musical numbers in it and sort of like, you know, little musical vignettes. And it is, and it's sort of honestly what it is, the story of like the, how Bowie, you know, started out as sort of more as a singer songwriter, long hair as a troubadour, and he wore women's clothing. And then how he transitioned and became Ziggy Stardust, and then how he killed off that character. And then it ends, you know, it leads up to basically Let's Dance and how he became this persona.
Are you
this
a Bowie
hit
guy?
Maker.
You're a Bowie guy.
Huge Bowie.
Yeah,
he's
okay,
huge.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But it, and I remember, and it's kind of funny because like Hot Space, I hated with a passion when it came out. And then like years later, I was like, that's actually a really good album, the Queen album. And,
oh, sure.
And I will say, I admit, I hated Let's Dance until about, it was before
it's
Bowie
fun,
died.
It's a fun song.
And I came back around. I'm like, no, I meant the whole album.
Oh.
Hated all of it. Hated that whole era of Bowie. I was like, what are you doing?
You probably hated it because it wasn't artistic. It was mainstream for the masses. But yeah. As far as creative Bowie, that's his dead era.
Oh, and it's kind of funny because it's like it's sort of like a it's the long con because mm-hmm. he was like, oh, I want to see if I could be a hit maker.
And
he did.
Was.
And he's like, okay, I'm done with that. Yeah. And then he went back to making, you know, and even some of his later stuff is like, oh, that's a tough. That's tough.
Tough sell, buddy.
It's like when David Lynch made that Lawnmower movie.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're like, what? I don't know what to do.
That's what I feel about all David Lynch movies.
Yeah.
No, it's not a weird movie at all. It's about this guy who wants to visit his dying brother, and it's based on a true story. He rides his riding lawnmower like 400 miles to get there.
Oh.
And it's like,
a G-rated Disney movie.
It's a straight-up G-rated Disney family movie.
Yeah. That is weird.
Yeah.
It's like when see if he can do it.
It's really good.
When
it's
Wes Craven made that romantic movie.
Yeah. Totally.
Like, what?
It's really good. But, yeah, so if you haven't seen Velvet Goldmine, I highly recommend it. And I honestly, when you watch that, you'd be like, yeah, I'm okay with the Queen movie as it is, because it is more fun.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think it would be hard to make the Todd Phillips movie. It would be hard to make that decadent movie without seeming judgmental of Freddie Mercury.
I agree.
I wonder if
Brian May and Roger Taylor are extreme. I mean, they're very open about a lot of the stuff that happened in the band.
Right.
But there's really not that much.
Right.
And I think that's they're like, but they're not going to, turn their
nothing negative about Queen.
Right.
You know, I kind of refer it to the Martin Luther King problem. Where, I mean, he's got a past. He's
and it's a similar issue of, like, you can't make that movie because the family won't give you the rights to the speeches.
Right. Like, you won't get a legit, authentic look into who he was as a man outside of the public person because the family's like, no.
I still can't believe you can own those speeches.
Not unless you want to say, I have a nocturnal hallucination.
Yeah.
That just seems like that'd be public. The speech is just because they're so.
Well, it's kind of like songs, though. I mean, somebody wrote them.
Yeah.
So, they charged when they made that that monument to him in D.C. They had to pay to put a quote from him on it. So that's how you go. Well, I guess that's it for this one. We should probably go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Dan. You can find me on Twitter, DanGraney67, GRANEY.
This is Joe. You can also follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at KevinRBracket.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. And Chris, where can they find you?
I am on Twitter at Hossapalooza, or you can check out my other podcast, which is the Blues Hockey Podcast at BluesHockeyPodcast.com or pretty much anywhere where you stream podcasts.
And if you want to find the show itself, you can do that at Facebook.com/RealSpoilers, on Twitter at RealSpoilers, or on Patreon at Patreon.com/RealSpoilers. Spoiler. So that's it for this one. I have no idea what we're doing next week.
Overlord.
Apparently Joe's voting for Overlord.
I'll come back.
And Chris wants to stay in the guest room until it's time. So
I've heard nothing but great things about that movie.
Yeah.
It looks awesome.
It's another JJ movie.
I'm thinking it must be pretty good because JJ is trying to shop his $500 million production deal, and which tells me that this must be pretty good if he's trying to shop it now.
Right.
So this was the movie that the last time I was here was rumored to be a Cloverfield sequel.
Ah, gotcha.
And apparently it's
so
not.
So perhaps that will be our movie.
Oh, it's gonna be.
Until so thanks for tuning in, and until next time, Mozart collapses during the Magic Flute.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.